You're listening to the Wild Mystic Woman podcast, an interview series of powerful conversations with spiritual entrepreneurs, creative change makers, and visionary leaders. I'm your host, Leila Saad, and I'm a writer, mentor, and healer for women doing their soul work and their soul's work. In each episode, we hold intimate and holy conversations on womanhood, spirituality, creativity, business, sacred activism, and how we can live and lead as the most powerful expression of our truest self. Welcome to a new episode of the Wild Mystic Woman podcast. We are smack bang in eclipse season this month, so you might be feeling all the feels. This is a really powerful month for releasing what is no longer working for you in your life and reclaiming your truth. And so I'm sending you lots of love as you move through this intense month. Last week, we spoke with Modern Money Witch, Lara Rose Duong, and it's been such a joy to hear about how this conversation has really been serving our listeners. I've had several people share with me that they've listened to the episode not once, but twice, because it was that impactful. I've also had listeners share how they've gone out to buy some new money honey jars for their altars, which is very exciting. And I've also heard about how this conversation has triggered some deeper reflection and shadow diving, because money is a subject that does tend to bring up a lot of our core wounds. If that's you, if you find yourself in that place, I encourage you, if you're willing, to explore some of those triggers a little more deeply, but to do so by first creating safe space for yourself. So you maybe want to create sacred space with the elements, or you may want to smudge yourself with some white sage or Palo Santo before listening to the episode or while you're listening to it. You might want to meditate, or you may want to use grounding and protective crystals like black tourmaline, hematite, or obsidian to create a feeling of safety. Money work is a type of soul work, and it's really important to be gentle with yourself and responsible for yourself so that you can approach this self-reflection feeling grounded and safe. And if you're looking for a place to have these kind of conversations, I really invite you to check out Lara Rose's free Facebook group, The Rich Witch Circle with LRD. You can find the link to that group in the show notes for LR's podcast episode. So before we jump into this week's episode, I just want to remind you that on August 10th, I will be raising the fee for the Sovereign Sisterhood, which is my monthly membership community and spiritual sisterhood for wild women and modern mystics. Since launching the sisterhood a few months ago, I've continued to add more features to it. And so for that reason, I will be raising the monthly membership fee. However, the new fee will only apply to those who sign up on the date that it's being raised. So the fees go up on August 10th, and if you sign up before August 10th, you get to stay at the current fee, which is $20 per month, and you'll stay at that fee even after the price goes up. But if you sign up on August 10th or after August 10th, you'll be signing up at the newer, higher fee. So if you've been thinking about joining the Sovereign Sisterhood, now is a really great time to do so. We are just a few days shy of August 10th, so I really encourage you to go check out the page for that on my website. You'll find it at wildmysticwoman.com/sovereign-sisterhood. Okay, so let's dive into this week's episode. I am very excited to share this conversation with soul guide, shadow diver, and spiritual teacher, Lerin Alta. Lerin is a spiritual mentor who helps women to ignite true spiritual liberation. Her workshops, retreats, and one-on-one intensives have been called transformation temples for unruly, soulful women. She believes loss, grief, and pain are healing initiations, and if honored, they will fortify you, bringing you through the shadows into the light of your soul. Using movement, meditation, ritual, art, and ancient spiritual practices, Lerin guides women deep into their spiritual journey, helping clients to surrender their facades, shed their fears, and finally come home to themselves. Now, you can tell just from this description that Laren is a woman after my own heart. She is doing the work that I absolutely love doing. I mean, I've been a fangirl of Laren's for quite a few years because she just exudes this authentic, regal, sovereign presence, and also because her writing is so soulful and so true. In this episode, Laren and I had a deep conversation about devotion, truth, sovereignty, grief, rage, what it means to be a warrior soul, and what it's like for both of us navigating the online spiritual world as Black women. So settle in and get ready to receive some deep soul wisdom for your business and life. So welcome to the show, Laren.
Thank you for having me. I'm so honored and excited to be here.
I am so excited to have this conversation with you. I feel such a deep soul sister connection with you. I have been stalking you for probably the last 2 or 3 years. And your presence really emanates through the online business world. You really carry an energy of embodied wisdom. Mm-hmm. And so I know this conversation is really going to serve as medicine for whoever's listening to it.
Mm, thank you. Mm.
So Laren, the first question I want to ask you, what truths are you currently exploring and navigating in your business and your life?
Such a beautiful question. Thank you for opening our conversation with that. I think of my work, my business, my work as a devotional practice. And so the truth that I'm exploring most present is, how can I be in more full devotion? How can I surrender more? How can I trust God or the divine or the sacred, by whatever name you call it, more? How can I get out of my own way? And that's true in my life and in my business, but because they're so interconnected, I don't really see a dividing line between the two. And because I know I'm doing the work that I was born to do, the reason why I'm in this body, on this planet at this time, it's really about surrendering to the process and being in devotion to whatever needs to happen and move through me next. So that's the truth that I'm constantly trying to get snuggle up to and get closer to. Yesterday I was driving down the street and looking for parking, which was taking way longer than I had planned, but that was okay because I passed by this row of taxi cabs and there was a man on the side of the taxi cab on the sidewalk with his prayer mat out, doing prayer in the middle of the day, in the middle of downtown Seattle, on the sidewalk in a country that is steeped in Islamophobia right now, in violence and fear mongering and othering of anyone who dares not only have that kind of reverence for their sacred practice, but in the middle of the street. And he, to me, was living devotion. He was not letting his fear or anyone else's stop him from being in that prayer. And that's how I want to live every day. So I just thought of him as an angel and prayed his protection while he was doing his prayer on the
sidewalk. Oh my gosh, you've already brought me to tears. How did you do that? Oh my gosh, just, you know, as a Muslim woman, not living in the Western world, living in the Middle East, but looking at my brothers and sisters where you are and seeing the Islamophobia, I don't know that I would have the courage to do what he did. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for bringing forward that example of devotion, because that's it, right? It's like a very deep connection to the divine, where other things just bounced off of him. His main focus was my devotion.
Yes.
So how is that showing up for you as you're kind of snuggling up to that? What does that look like for you?
Well, I love the way you asked the question about what truths am I exploring, because for me it's about telling the truth faster and more directly and unapologetically. And I've never been a people pleaser. I've never had that struggle of trying to take care of myself and make sure that everyone liked me. I just, that's just not how I was born. That's just not my makeup. And so I've always been a truth teller. I've always been the emperor has no clothes kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
But as I have built more visibility and more widely known business or brand, that can be kind of challenging in the face of, you know, I do spiritual work, I do soul work. And so a lot of people are look for what I say, you know, I'm not on a unicorn, on a rainbow, clouds playing harps. Like my work is about really telling the truth and not just my version of the truth, but helping you connect with your version of the truth.
Yes.
And unapologetically, without compromise, without trying to explain or justify who you are, what you believe, how you want to live and express yourself on the planet. And, but really creating a sanctuary of safety and love for you to own and live your truth no matter where you are, who you're around. And that yes. requires me to be that. It requires me to tell my truth wherever I am, whoever I'm with, and to own it. And to me, that's an act of devotion. And it hasn't been without consequence. I have talked openly to my community about struggles and challenges I had growing up, trauma that I experienced in my family. And my family was not very happy or pleased that I was willing to talk publicly about that, even though I didn't share the names or the person or what had happened. And so for me, it's being willing to be a stand for the truth, even when other people who are very close and important to me don't want to hear it too.
Oh, so good. Your work is soul work, and I've been calling soul work truth work. Mm-hmm. Because that's what you've just described is exactly it. It's, as you said, you know, being willing to say the truth directly. Soul work is not comfortable.
Yes.
It's not comfortable for us, and it's not comfortable for those around us who love us and who are invested in the us that we were.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking how I want to phrase this question, because I'm just thinking about how you said, you know, it didn't really jive well with the people around you who were like, don't say these things, you know. And yet we are wired for connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always this like interplay of, I want to speak and live my truth. And there's a sense of loyalty. How do you navigate that?
I think the first thing is I'm super blessed. I am remarkably blessed in the sense that even when my family has not wanted to hear the truths, that I have never felt like they would disown me or leave me.
Mm.
And so I know that I feel very covered and very really blessed to have not feel like I'm going to risk the loss of my family, even though I have said and done plenty of things that they did not approve of. So I'll start by saying that. And because I'm not a people pleaser, it doesn't even occur to me to try and bend or shape or mold myself to be more palatable, because it actually feels terrible to me. It feels terrible energetically. It feels terrible physically. It feels terrible emotionally not to be in my own truth.
Mm.
But beyond that, just as like my individual relationship to my family, what the other two pieces that keep me fueled in being a truth teller and doing the work in the way that I do it is, one, because I know my work is a devotional practice and I'm in service to something greater even than my family. I'm in greater service to something bigger than the limitations that my families may have to what they can or cannot see, that God has my back, that the sacred has my back. So even when they're disappointed, I know I'm still doing the work I've been appointed to do. And that's okay, because I serve someone bigger or something bigger than even my family.
Oh, so good. So when you're working with the women that you lead, and I can imagine there's lots of women who don't necessarily have your, I'm going to speak for my truth and I'm not going to people please, I'm not going to bend, you know, I know that was me for a very long time. How do you support them in connecting to what their greater anchor is? Because that's what I'm hearing as you're saying is that there's a greater thing holding me here than other people's fear and my own fear.
Absolutely. So part of my work I call shadow diving, which is really about going into the shadow, not just living on the unicorns, playing the heart in the pastel colors, but really going into the hard muck, going into your own fear, because the fear that we kind of own and validate and take responsibility for is often as other people, like, oh, my mother's afraid of this or so, is our own fear of abandonment, our own fear of rejection, our own fear. So if we can go into our own fear and heal that, then other people's fear gets dissolved, and not be actually, not that they actually stop being fearful, but our relationship to it changes. We don't take it on as our responsibility to fix or mend, because we know, one, it's theirs, and two, it's not permanent. So it's always ever changing. And if we can own it, then we can stand in our own power. So I most of my, the women I work with are either on the precipice of a really big decision or a really big change, or in the aftermath of a really big change. And so the work that we do is about owning their power, coming back home to themselves, because they're so usually super high achievers, super high accomplishers who have built their whole lives around external validation and approval and pats on the back and accolades and all of the things, but have no idea, are very disconnected from what that would actually feel like if they gave it to themselves internally first.
Yes.
And that's where we start.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And as a former high achieving law graduate from the corporate world, you know, eldest and only daughter of immigrant parents, I know exactly what that perfectionistic, high achievement, kind of high adrenaline, really, hyper masculinized energy is like. It's exhausting.
It is.
It's so tiring. And, you know, one of the words that I've really been embracing this year is soften. And what's interesting is when I first started leaning into that word, I felt really unsafe there. Felt really unsafe to be soft. It felt safe to be armored up and to be ready for the battle, right? And it's interesting because you use the word warrior soul a lot in your business, but when I read it, I don't get the image of an armored up woman or soul. I don't get that image. So what does being a warrior soul mean to you?
Oh, thank you for making that distinction. It's such a great question. So warrior soul to me is rooted in sovereignty and is rooted in the being the center of your world, and not self-centered, but being in charge of yourself and your own decisions, and from a place of truth. Because when you're centered in yourself, there's nothing to defend. When you are fully fleshed out, when you're taking up all of your space, there's nothing, there's no cracks.
Yes.
There's no point of entry, because you are fully taking it up. You're not adjusting to let other people come into who you are, right? You're fully unfurling into yourself. And so I think of warrior souls, one, as women who have survived a great something. And that, for me, that could be, my community is anywhere from divorce, miscarriage, abuse, bankruptcy, but their great something is something that shocked them awake. It was something that, what I call a shatter point, that shocked them out of, they had done all the quote unquote right things, they'd accomplished all the things that they were supposed to do, and they got to some point and realized, oh, this is not what I thought it was going to be. I was sold a bill of goods. This is not who I am anymore, or who I ever was. And they wake up to something. So the warrior soul is the soul that's been baptized by fire and then went and said, okay, now what? Who am I really? Similar to your journey. How do I live from the truth of who I am, the soul of who I am, not just the external markers or narratives or labels of who I am, but how do I live from who I actually am?
So, yeah. And it's such holy, holy work to go through it, to be the person going through it, being burnt down. It's interesting because I'm remembering my journey last year, but I'm also going through a fire this year, it seems as well, just of a different sort. And even inside the pain and the discomfort and the why is this taking so long and can it just be over now? even inside all of that, I really can see the strange beauty inside of it. It's not a pretty beauty, it's a dark beauty. And it makes us who we become. Yes. So I really, I just have so much respect for you in doing this work because, you know, my journey through Wild Mystic Woman has been going further and further into this work of holding space for women who are doing exactly that. And I go back to what you were saying at the beginning, which is that if I want to be able to stand for that, you know, I have to live it. One of the things that I've really been navigating is in the past, before I had Wild Mystic Woman, when I was a business and leadership coach, I was really scared of letting other people see my imperfections. So I thought that being a leadership coach meant, you know, that I always was in, you know, Wonder Woman stance and nothing ever cracked me, or I didn't have any fears. And through Wild Mystic Woman, I've just gone the complete opposite way, which is to really show up in my truth. But what's interesting is I'm finding that you can stand in your truth and in the vulnerability of your truth and still be very, very strong. I see that when I read things that you share, that you are, you're not putting on a mask of, yes, this is me, Laren. I am so, you know, a goddess. let me tell you, I am a spiritual teacher. Let me show you how to be better. You really show up in your vulnerability, but there is such strength there. Where does that come from? Like, how do you live that?
I think part of it is just how I was born. Sometimes when I was younger, I would be I wasn't very self-conscious in a sense. So I didn't really have a lot of negative thoughts about myself. For example, when I used to do beauty pageants in high school, and I'm a very obsessive, focused person. So I would I would record international, domestic, state beauty pageants and watch them over and over and over again, back to back to back. I would read all the books. I hired a pageant coach. I was very into it. I was like, I'm going to be Miss Universe. Over time, I realized I actually did not want to be Miss Universe, but it taught me devotion in a sense. So when I started doing pageants, my platform was self-love at 15 years old.
Wow.
And this is very unconventional, right? In the pageant, especially in the pageant world.
And especially back then.
Right.
That self-love is something that we're very familiar with now, but I don't remember ever hearing it when I was a kid.
Right.
Yeah. And so, or a teenager.
That was the only, because I had figured out that if I didn't love myself, nothing else was going to matter. And that that's all I wanted from everybody else was just to love who they were. So that's all I, that was my only platform. I wasn't hunger. It was just really, how do you love yourself? Because I thought that we had been, especially, I didn't have the languaging around gender and feminism and all that at that point. But I knew that girls were being told that something was wrong. They needed to be fixed. They needed to be more prim and proper, less whatever. This was too tight. That was too short. You're too young for that. You're too old for that. But when I looked at magazines, all of the articles were about self-improvement and not self-love. Mm. And so that's where I started. And that was fundamentally my belief. My mother will, to this day, jokingly tell stories that when my best friend and I would be in the car and with her, we would just talk about the importance of self-love. And my mom would get we talked about it so much, she would just roll her eyes and get sick of us talking about it. Like, she was just annoyed because we talked about it too much. But so I say all that to say, even though in our work, in especially in the online world, it seems to be an end goal to talk about self-love and confidence and self-care, it seems that when women are actually living that way, that they are the anomaly. That when they're not trying to strive or prove, that there's still their sense of judgment around, who does she think she is? Why does she feel that way? Or how come she's so confident? And my only intention, my goal, is to just have people accept exactly who they are, exactly where they are, with love and no judgment, because we're all evolving and we're all human. And there's no there's no end goal to our perfection. We're never going to be able to achieve this false sense of perfection. So we might as well love who we are right now.
Yes. Amen. I love that so much. Can we talk a little bit about what it means to be a Black woman in the spiritual world? And I ask this because when I was on my Wild Mystic Woman awakening journey, I began, you know, my eyes were opened up to the world of feminist spirituality, first of all. Mm-hmm. And I began to notice the word priestess, and then see priestesses. And very quickly, something became very clear in my eyes. What I was seeing was that a priestess looked a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I was still wearing the hijab, so I was looking out and thinking, I don't look white or blonde or thin, or, you know, I'm not standing in a field with a long flowing dress, or, you know, just a lot of, you know what I'm talking about, a lot of imagery that is very same. Mm-hmm. And so it made me feel like, oh, well, then that's not me then. I don't fit there. So where do I fit? It took a really long time for me to say, I can claim this too. That somebody doesn't get to give me this title. What has that been like for you? What have you noticed in this online spiritual world about being a Black woman?
Oh, it's such a good question with so many layers of answers that I have. Because in one sense, if I'm going to start with the spiritual sense, the spiritual lens, we're all expressions of the divine, right? We're all expressions of God.
Yes.
And so that means it's beyond race and color and gender and all that stuff. Yeah. That's true.
Yes.
In the spiritual realm. And we are in the human realm, which has all of these lived realities, race and class and privilege and nation and language and all of those things, which I have very deep, rich political perspectives about cultural appropriation, race, white supremacy, all these things that I've studied and been very steeped in for a really long time. And although I don't really talk about it in my work or in these kind of online communities that talk about it a lot, it is definitely the lens through which I see the world and my work.
Yes.
And when I started out in the online space in 2011, I was in a similar position as you. I was very like, wait, I'm not, where are the Black women?
Right.
Where are they who are doing this work? And I wasn't even specifically doing spiritual work at that time. It was the same work, but I wasn't naming it that. Mm-hmm. And so my first website was like hot pink and purple. And I was in a field jumping in a tutu. It was really...
I can't imagine that. That's so... It's okay. So interesting. So interesting how we transform, right?
Yeah, because that is a part of my personality. I'm very silly. I love fun. I love color. Mm. It was definitely a part of who I am. And from the branding perspective, it wasn't, I hadn't figured out my brand yet. I wasn't
differentiating.
Right. So I was just kind of doing what Sark and Gala Darling, they were kind of my inspirations. But I still didn't see any Black women who were doing any of the work that I was interested in doing. And when it started evolving into being more explicitly spiritual work, I still didn't see any who weren't Christian.
Right.
So part of it, I took a step back away from my business about a year ago to completely rebrand for many reasons and rebirth. And part of it was creating the most true brand, the most true space for myself online, so that when you saw my visuals, when you heard my words, when you looked at my website, you knew exactly who I was.
Yeah.
And that would differentiate me, because I was being true to Laren, there's no one else like me, like there's no one else like you. And so I had to shut down every other quote unquote inspiration, so that I could really create the most, what I call, polarizing and magnetic brand. I wanted to polarize people who were not right for me, and I wanted to attract and magnetize those who were perfect for me. Mm. And so that had to require not looking at anybody else who was doing any kind of work, and really stay true to my own voice. But it can feel isolating to be a Black woman who is politicized and has cultural criticism and wants to talk about things with a deep lens of politic and spirituality in a world that wants to play in either one or the other.
Yes.
That is difficult. That is very difficult, because I find that if I'm having if I'm being interviewed for a podcast, for example, that's focused on spirituality, either they don't want to talk about race at all, or they want to essentialize me to just my race.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah. So, and to really have the level of conversation that would be required is going back to like 101 to talk about it. And I don't really want to talk about, well, what is race? What is racism? How is your privilege showing up in this conversation? That's not all. So it's there's no cut and dry answer.
No.
But I think it's for me about knowing where my boundaries are, what I'm willing to talk about, what I'm not willing to talk about, and expanding the conversation. So being a Black woman in the conversation who can talk about lots of things instead of being kind of either tokenized or essentialized down to only talking about race.
Yeah, I really love this conversation, because I think you're probably the first Black woman who is deep, that does, you know, deep soul work like I do, deep spiritual work. And so we have the language for the spiritual work that we do, which you know, transcends all race and right. any isms, right? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like, that's our identity, and we have these layers of identity. Mm-hmm. For me, an added one is Muslim as well, which, you know, for a long time, you know, people are like, how can you be Muslim and be a feminist? How can you be Muslim and be a priestess? And that, particularly that last one for me was like, how can I be Muslim and be a priestess? And one of the ways that I've been navigating this, first of all, is saying I get to define what any of this means.
Yes.
Right? I get to say I can be this and that. And at the same time, I was smiling when you were saying about the work that you're doing to rebirth your brand and your website because you want to show up as your truest self. I do that regularly. I shut up my website regularly and I go through word by word by word, searching for where are the places where I'm using other people's ways of expression and not my own. Where are the ways where I am not saying something as directly as I could be saying it because I'm trying to reach everyone instead of just speaking from my direct truth. And so, you know, that means that there's going to be people who are just going to say, you know what, I just want to talk about the spiritual stuff. I don't want to talk about this other stuff. That's not relevant. We're all one. All lives matter and all of that kind of stuff. And that's just not for me. I want to be able to navigate both worlds. And I just find it, you know, one of the things that I realized quite quickly with my podcast, for example, is the first like five episodes that I recorded were all with white women. And that wasn't intentional. When I began the podcast, I wanted to speak to the women who had been closest to me on my journey. Mm-hmm. But then I looked at it and was like, there's no women of color here. What is going on? And so now I'm having to like self-reflect. Like, okay, Layla, that was your safe zone. You were talking to the people that you knew, but you need to stretch yourself because you're not the only black woman doing this kind of work or whose voice needs to be heard by your community. And so it's that internal like... I see myself as I don't want to say, it's not role model, that's not the word that I would use, but I want to stand as someone who can hold the many different layers of being a spiritual mentor and still having these other layers and those being important to me and me showing up in all of them. And that's what I see when I read some of the things that you share online. You share a lot and of things that educate me around race and privilege and marketing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, do better. You know, you need to do better, Layla. But it is interesting because, like I said, if I looked at the kind of my list, I would say the majority are white women. And I don't know why that is, but that's not going to stop me from talking about all these other things that are important as well.
Yeah. Do you find that Muslim women join your community too, or how do they show up in your world?
They tend to privately message me and say, you know, it's really inspiring seeing you doing this work, especially since everything that you're talking about is basically not welcome traditionally in our religion. So they won't necessarily publicly speak up or even, I can think of one lady who is in my community. She's there and she's exploring her path as a wild mystic woman who happens to be Muslim too, but the majority tend to privately message me. Yeah. And that's because there's still a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear of what this all means and how it bumps up against the traditional view of being a Muslim. So thank you for diving into that with me, because it's not a black and white thing, right?
It's not simple. It's complicated because for so many reasons, right? Like a lot of people who are successful, quote unquote successful in business, in spiritual business, in online business, in online spiritual business are white.
Yeah.
And so they are people that we take classes from and learn marketing from and learn sales from and learn, and they may not at all be aware of our personal identities and the ways that they're contradicting them or invisibilizing them or invalidating them. Yeah. And we have to take it upon ourselves to create our own kind of curriculum to do that. And so part of it's a numbers game, part of it's privilege, part of it's taboo to have these kind of conversations.
Yeah.
So thank you for opening the door and having it.
You're so welcome. And thank you to everyone who's listening who might be sitting in the discomfort of what has been coming up during this conversation. But like all shadow work that we do, it is uncomfortable. This is shadow work. This is going into the unspoken. But when we shine a light on it and we can see what, we can start bringing healing and transformation to it. So that's what you're getting today with Lauren and I.
Exactly. That's where the good stuff happens.
That's all where all the yummy stuff happens. So Lauren, let's look at the cards that I pulled for you for our conversation today. Okay. I have pulled 3 cards for you from the Wild Unknown Tarot. And they are the, now you are a tarot reader, that's right.
I am in a very non-traditional way. So I would not say that I'm a tarot reader specifically, but I use tarot cards.
Yes, yeah, I would say I'm an intuitive tarot reader, so I haven't done any training in it. I do dabble in the traditional meanings, but I'm definitely becoming more comfortable in what comes up for me when I see the cards. So the cards that came up are the 7 of Pentacles. And in the book, it talks about this being about a period of contemplation, which I found really interesting. So we'll see what comes up for you with that card. But it's just for the imagery of it, it's got 7 pentacles kind of in a diagonal line from, I guess, bottom left to top right. And this card for me always kind of feels like the work of like cumulative work, and how soul work is that way, that it's cumulative, and that we get kind of into deeper and deeper layers, but we also rise higher and higher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes, and the second card is the 4 of Wands, which has this beautiful like light in the middle. It's like a very joyous card. But the first word that came to me for this card is vision.
Mm.
Yeah. And then the last card is the 5 of Cups, and there's a horse that is looking down. It's like a side profile of a horse looking down, and he looks very sad. And the word that came to me with this card is grief.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, so I love that.
Yeah. So you can jump off on any one of those cards, you know, what immediately comes up for you that you want to speak on.
I want to start with the 5 of Cups and your association of grief with it. I often say that death has been my master teacher.
Say that again. Death has been your?
Master teacher.
Mm.
Because I think we all have, where I am in my philosophy about this right now is that we all have at least one master teacher, one teacher that has brought us lessons.
Yeah. And brought us to our knees, right?
Absolutely. And so death was mine. I had a lot of people die between 19 and 24. I had someone in my life die every 3 to 9 months that I was very close to.
Wow.
And then a few years later, I had that same kind of wave of death. And it was debilitating because it was my first relationship to impermanence. And that's what the lesson was. So death was my master teacher, but the lesson was impermanence. Because also in that time, things were just disappearing from my life. Like,
yeah.
So clothes or jewelry. I'd traveled all through India and Nepal, and I'd collected this gorgeous jewelry and was in Africa and collected, and it just disappeared. Like, things just started disappearing. So I learned this lesson of impermanence. But so that's part of what equips me to be able to do this, the deep work that I do, is being able to walk through people, journey, guide them through their own shadow so they can really own their grief. Because part of what happens is, I believe that so much of the depression that we feel, so much of the sadness that we feel, is suppressed grief, because we don't live in a culture that has vehicles or tools or resources for really wailing anymore, for really grieving and surrendering and moving that energy through so that it can actually move through and be gone. Mm-hmm. We're taught to swallow it, to be clean, to be fast, to be efficient, to just hurry up and get things done, to push through. And there are things that happen every day in our lives that are grief worthy, and we don't know how to grieve. And so we just keep it in our bodies. And so I was at the pet supply store the other day with my 9-year-old mini poodle, Honey. And we were standing in line behind a few people to check out. And this woman came up to us and said, "Is she a Shih Tzu?" And she's not, she's a mini poodle, but I think she said Shih Tzu, something that looks kind of like a mini poodle. Mm. And I said, "No, she's a mini poodle." And she leaned down and started sobbing. And she said, "My dog died today."
Oh.
And she looked like this, like your dog. And she just, tear. And so of course I was there and holding her and holding space and letting her just cry. And Honey came and started licking on her. And I felt so honored to be able to witness and hold her in that such a raw moment, because part of the pet supply store has a hospital, and she was leaving the hospital. So I imagine that she'd either just put her dog down or brought her dog there. So it felt like such a gift for her to, one, be so honoring of her grief and to be raw with it and to be in the truth of it. Mm. And I felt like a gift to be able to be there and have the tools and the skills to just hold her and witness her. And I was brought to tears with her, and that my dog was there as kind of an angel of whatever she needed in that moment.
Yeah.
To know either that whatever she needed. And we so rarely have spaces to grieve anymore.
We really do. And it's such a huge part of soul work. I spent like a lot of time crying last year when I was going through my awakening, because there was just so many things that my eyes were opened up to, ways that I had been hurt, ways that I was hurting myself, things that had been said to me a long time ago that I was still holding on to, that society tells us you should, you know, you're too sensitive. You shouldn't still be thinking about things like that. And you're right. The energy gets stuck inside and it needs to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And if it's not allowed to come out and be grieved, it's expressed in far less healthy ways. One of the first things that came up to me when you were talking about how as a society we fear grief, it reminds me also of how we fear this archetype of the wild woman.
Yes.
That grief feels wild and uncontrollable, and you can't put it in a box, and you just want to fix it and make it neat and tidy, and it's not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not, but because the reality is nothing is neat and tidy.
Right.
Nothing is really sanitized. Nothing is really linear. Nothing is really safe. It's just that we usually have frameworks around it, and right. Grief puts us in such a deep place that we don't have frameworks there. There's, even when we try to superimpose, well, you should be done grieving by, you should stop feeling sad by, you should, it doesn't work.
Mm.
So, you know, nothing in life is linear. You're a mother and a wife. Marriage isn't linear, even though we're taught that, right? Like, business.
It's really not.
Motherhood is linear.
Yeah.
Life is linear. It's not clean. It's not cute. It doesn't always feel good. It's not sexy. It's not marketable. It's not packageable. But we live in a culture that teaches us different, that teaches us that we're supposed to, everything is supposed to be wrapped up in a bow. And it's just not. Life is wild. Life is messy. Life, healing requires death. It's essential. It's part of the process. So I think part of it is like just getting down to the fundamentals of what we mean by all these things so that we can live in the truth of them and not the illusion of what we think they're supposed to be.
Yes, yes. I really love this because I just love it for so many reasons. And I'm like, Lauren, I just want to talk to you forever, but I know that we are getting closer to our time. Tell me about the other cards. Is there anything that spoke to you with the Seven of Pentacles or the Four of Wands?
They're so connected for me. But before we jump to those two, I wanted to say one more thing about grief.
Please do.
Because the other piece is that grief and rage are so connected. They are first cousins. They are bed buddies. They are lovers. And if where there's smoke, there's fire. So where there's one, there's usually another that's suppressed. So where there's grief unexpressed, usually can come out in rage. That either that road rage or rage at your children or rage at someone else. Like there, it comes out to the world or into yourself, but untended to grief often looks like rage. And all of that needs to be healed. Not the symptoms of the grief, not the symptoms of the rage, but the deep wounding that never got addressed is what needs to be. So,
I'm so glad you brought that up because these are what I see in my Sovereign Sisterhood membership community is we do explore intense. I'm an intense person. So, you know, this is the work that I bring, but we do explore what would be labeled dark feelings. What would be labeled bad feelings like grief and rage and sadness that goes on and on and on. And, you know, of course, there's always a line between, you know, does this person need therapy or, you know, what do they need? And I definitely ask our members to take care of their needs. But at the same time, you know, these kind of feelings shouldn't necessarily just be shut up in therapists' offices. You know, right. and the there is so much power in being witnessed by another in those feelings. And that's exactly what came up for me when, you know, you were giving the example of the woman in the pet shop. There's so much medicine in being allowed to cry, to rage, and being witnessed, just being witnessed, not being fixed, not being necessarily even soothed. Witnessed.
Absolutely. Witness is the complete infrastructure of everything I do, is being sacred and holding a sacred container for whatever is present to unfurl. Absolutely. Because I don't believe that trauma happens in isolation and neither does healing. You need to be witnessed for true healing to happen. Not, like you said, not coddled, not even soothed, because soothing can interrupt the healing process.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to get it out. Oh, we could talk about this all day.
We really could.
My favorite things to talk about. But thank you. Thank you for reflecting that back. Because it's so important that we give ourselves. And that's part of, you know, I think, like you said, priestess can sometimes be overused and so can wild woman. And there are a lot of wild, quote unquote, people who are using wild woman in a very traditional, boring, stale kind of narrative that doesn't actually have any wildness other than the word wild. And you have to be willing to be wild. And part of willing to be wild is being willing to disappoint people, being willing to let people down, being willing to be in the discomfort. Wildness is not comfortable, even for the person who's wild.
Yeah, definitely not. Definitely not. But so worth it.
So worth it. Absolutely. Because that's true freedom.
Yeah.
That's true freedom, which yes. leads me to the other two cards, the Seven of Pentacles and the Four of Wands, is accumulative work, right? There is no finish line. There is no arrival. We are continually coming home to ourselves. Like you said, with your website, you're continually going back and finding the words that are most true to you, what taking out what's not. It's an accumulative journey. And we have to remember that. A lot of my clients, when we first start working together, are, you know, super high achievers. So they are used to setting a goal and achieving it and living a linear line. Mm-hmm. And I have to remind them, this is not linear. We may be asking the same questions for 6 months of working together and going deeper into the answers, or asking a different question, a better question that gets you really to the heart of the matter, because there's no finish line. This isn't the Olympics of spirituality. This is really about deep soul work, coming home to who you actually are. And that's the vision.
Oh my gosh. This isn't the Olympics of spirituality is the best line I think I've ever heard. A freaking men. Oh, because, you know, when I started doing this work for others, a big mm-hmm. fear that I had was, but you know, they want me to get them there faster. And I know it doesn't happen faster. It happens when it happens. Mm-hmm. And I have gradually become more and more comfortable with that. Like that's just how it is. I cannot guarantee you what's going to happen or how long it's going to take. And that's just something you're going to have to become comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And we're not comfortable with that in modern day society. We're really not comfortable with it.
Absolutely. And we think that there are shortcuts.
We want to hack spirituality, right?
Exactly.
Hack the spiritual journey.
There's no hack. There's no shortcut. There's no quick tip. There's no, this is work. It's work. And that's maybe a buzzkill for some people to hear, but it's true. It's work. And that's why I say my work is a devotional practice. I don't want to meditate every morning, but I do anyway. Sometimes I want to sleep in. Sometimes I want to not write. Sometimes I want to, you know, do other things, but I know that it's a discipline that helps me be in devotion to my greater purpose, which isn't something I get to decide what it is. I'm of service to something that's greater than me. And I think we could talk about what I'm about to say, I feel like this could take us in a whole new direction.
Oh, say it. I really want to hear it now.
Part of what I found, and part of also why I had to take a step back and get really clear about what I believe and what I value in a lot of, especially online spiritual communities, is that there is no, or is very minimal reverence for something greater. It's very self-directed. It's very much about me, my manifestation, my visualization, not about like deferring to something greater. And I think that is part of where it gets dangerous and can be so stressful. Cause I was in that kind of phase for a while. And I felt like my success or failure was all on me because I was in charge. And it took me a long time and a friend to really kind of pull me back and say, Laren, you know, remember, this isn't just about you. You can like pray and surrender. And it took a whole reclamation of that for me. And when I did, my whole everything changed. Because I wasn't in charge. I don't know enough about anything to be in charge of anything, really.
I'm really glad that you brought this up. And really, really glad that you brought this up because how to say this? I think I've been re-exploring my relationship with prayer. As Muslims, we have very prescribed practice of prayer. And as a wild mystic woman, exploring how to express devotion to the divine mystically, intuitively, Sometimes the two just don't gel together well. And what I'm exploring is what I love about the Islamic prayers is that five times a day, you're taking time out of your day to ritually clean yourself, to put on a special outfit of prayer, to step away from everything, and do a devotional act. But sometimes when you're doing a devotional act that you're used to doing every single day, you become disconnected from the meaning of it. And I think it's probably similar with saying prescribed prayers in, for example, Christianity, where you have the Hail Mary or, you know, the Our Father, and you're just used to saying it, and you're saying the words, but you're not connecting anymore to what you're saying. And so what I am navigating now is to rebuild that connection, because like you know, you've brought up this word devotion, and that's the part that I really love, is the devotion. But I want there to be real meaning there. So I would love to know, this is all to say, I would love to know what your prayer practice looks and feels like.
It's mini, M-I-N-I, and it's mini, M-A-N-Y. I thank God for everything all the time. I am constant conversation. And to me, it's like thank you for that parking place. Thank you, God. Thank you for that insight. Thank you, God. Thank you for that conversation. Thank you, God. Thank you for that new client. Thank you, God. Like, thank you for that idea. Thank you, God. Like, I'm in constant gratitude. And so for me, many prayers that are happening all the time, which helps me remember that it doesn't begin and end with me, that there is a source beyond source that I can just be in gratitude for and not think that this is about me, actually. So that's part of it. And that alone is one of those, like you said, ritual cleansing. Like, it's a cleansing of me getting out of my ego. Like, thank you. Like, this decentering myself, being centered in myself, but decentering myself.
Yeah.
And then the mini is, I have studied religious science for a long time, and I love the way that they pray. Because it's affirming prayers. It's like a five-step prayer, that the first part of the prayer is like spirit or God or the divine, however, they don't have a particular way of naming it, but it's like, I know that you are in all things at all times. I recognize that you are in the middle of this problem right here with me, that you are doing exactly what you need to be doing. And I know I'm an expression of your divine love. And so I just call forward your love in this moment to heal and move through and release and heal anything that is no longer serving my highest and best good. I trust that this is already happening. And so I just say, thank you. And I let it go. And so it is again.
Oh, Alarin, that is so beautiful. You're going to have to give me that prayer. I'm going to have to put it in the show notes, because that was perfect.
I would be happy to. And it's a structure of the way that you move through it so that you can fill in whatever needs to be filled in. But I'll be happy to send that to you.
Please do. And I just can feel the people who are listening to this going, yes, please give us that prayer. Because in the middle of the darkness, when there isn't actually anything you can do and that you're supposed to do, when you finally come to the point on your knees, when you're in surrender, and you want to know that you're not alone, a prayer like that is freaking powerful.
Yes, I love it so much. And the other way that I pray is, before I get out of bed, before I do anything in the morning, before I even open my eyes, I start with a prayer that I was, and I think it's a Bible verse actually that I was raised with, that says, "This is the day that the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it." And again, that takes me off the hook from having to achieve or do in order to be happy. I can surrender my day before I even open my eyes, before I even put things into motion. I can just know that the day has already been made for me, and I can rejoice and be glad in it.
Oh, so beautiful. Because I can, it just feels like with these different practices that you've shared, that you are a living, walking prayer. You know, you are living inside of the prayer.
Yeah, that's feels really good. That feels really important.
Yeah.
Because when I haven't, it wasn't fun. It wasn't as, you know, life wasn't as good.
No.
It may have been, but I didn't feel it that way.
No, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, Lauren, this conversation has been deep, delicious, dark at times, but really, really important. And I thank you deeply for coming in here and sharing this soul medicine for everyone who's listening. Thank you for bringing your whole self to this conversation. Thank you for showing us what it means to live and walk and speak your truth. And just so grateful to bring your presence onto this podcast. So thank you.
Thank you, Layla. I'm really honored and so grateful for the work that you are doing in the world. Thank you for being here.
But before I forget, how can people contact you? I know you're going through a website rebirth right now, so you might not necessarily have ways people can work with you, but you can let us know. How can we connect with you?
Yes, they can find me at sisterfire.com, SisterFire, and then the road will unfold together from there.
Yes, amazing. And what are some of the things that people can look forward to in terms of your offerings when your website does go live again?
Oh, this is so exciting. There's so many. So I only work with people in person, one-on-one in person, because my work started out as workshops, retreats, and intensives in person about almost 20 years ago. And I discovered the internet in 2011 and thought I had an online business, but I don't.
You have an in-person business.
I have an in-person business that uses the internet. So, and so people can look for 3-day intensive immersions where they are held in complete sanctuary and we do really deep soul work together, 6-month immersions. And I'm also secretly planning a in-person group experience, which they will have to come and join the community to learn more about, but that's kind of going on tour. So I'm very excited about that.
Amazing. Amazing. And I really encourage everyone to jump on Lauren's newsletter list. I don't join a lot of newsletters because I don't really make the time to read them. So I still follow people, but I don't necessarily read their newsletters, but I am on Lauren's list because you just read her words. They will, you know, they just light a fire in your soul, and they're deeply nourishing words, but really activating. So I really encourage everyone to jump on her list.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So thank you. That's the end of our conversation. Really looking forward to next week's podcast. We'll have more exciting guests on, but for now, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Wild Mystic Woman podcast. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can download more episodes and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. If you'd like to receive more Wild Mystic Woman medicine through email, I invite you to sign up for the temple letters at wildmysticwoman.com.